Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Well, let's bring in Jim Walsh. He's our Here and Now security analyst, and he's also with the Security Studies program at MIT. He's with us in the studio. Hello there, Jim.
Hi, Meghna.
So pick up where Robin and Tam left off here. I mean, are the United States and Russia headed towards more of a Cold War footing?
Well, yes. Now, let's put that in some context. It's not going to be the old Cold War. Remember, that's when Russia was a superpower. It's not a superpower anymore. It's a great power. It has a population, even if it's dying off, and it has energy resources. But it's not a superpower. But there is tensions. And it's not just here. It's in a variety of domains, including their interference in elections, both U.S. and European elections. In the arms control front, there are concerns about whether Russia is cheating on the INF Treaty and how that will be resolved. And just in a variety of domains, we seem more at odds than we have been cooperating. And in the past, we've had cooperation. I mean, the Russians helped get the Iran nuclear deal. They've helped with other proliferation issues. But that is a more fraught relationship these days.
So to the point, though, that here we have more than 20 countries acting in unison to expel Russians, you know, quote-unquote diplomats. I mean, how significant is that, that we have not just the U.S. and Russia or just the U.K. and Russia, but 20 countries together?
Well, I welcome it. I think it's a good thing. I mean, it has its limits, obviously, because the Russians will respond in kind. But we can't allow Putin to assassinate a British soil, a British citizen on British soil with impunity. I mean, that's unacceptable. And so I think we had to act. And by acting together, you know, we're sending a message that we don't accept the Russians' phony story here. And moreover, I welcome the fact that, you know, in recent times, we've had an administration that was more often criticizing our U.S. allies than standing with them. So I congratulate President Trump on doing the right thing here and standing with the British and with Europeans against this, you know, this unbelievable act.
Hmm. Well, the U.K., where this attack happened, was the first to expel Russians, more than 20, not that long ago. Then Prime Minister Theresa May appealed to Europe for a unified response, and Britain's Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson told the BBC that he believes, obviously, Europe listened.
They suddenly realized that this could happen in their own towns and in their own cities. And that, I remember that point really going over big.
Jim, here's my question, though. I mean, for a while now, for maybe a year or so, given the sort of strange relations between the president of the United States and his posture towards Russia, also Brexit and the UK, you know, trying to exit the European Union, there was some discussion about whether or not transatlantic alliances or European alliances had been somewhat destabilized by Russian activities. Does this unified action sort of push back against that and show that the alliances are as strong as they've ever been?
Absolutely, Meghna. I mean, it's one thing, you know, and obviously it's more complex and we'll see what happens over time. But yes, you know, and it might be that the Russians felt empowered to do this as a way to further deepen divisions. One, between Britain and the rest of Europe following Brexit, and two, a division between the U.S. and its European allies. And if that was the intention, I think it failed. So at the political level, I think it's important to have a show of unity. Now, they're all going to expel a bunch of Russian spies. The Russians will respond in kind. You know, at the end of the day, you could say the Russians sort of win on points because they'll have more spies than we will, and the West has a more permeable society. But I think you do have to stand up politically and send a message. And it means also that job one for the U.S. in its intelligence community is to begin to devise ways to impose costs on Putin and the Russian oligarchs. And
okay, can I just jump in here? Because I think this is a really important point, Jim. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was going to ask you, I mean, since you were talking about the tit for tat in terms of expulsions, how much of this is geopolitical theater? I mean, if we really want to push back against Russia in tangible, meaningful ways, what ought to, I mean, you were headed in that direction,
yes,
but what should the United States and Europe be doing?
Well, I think we're going to have to put our heads together and think about ways to target the oligarchs that support Putin and whatever Putin's personal and material interests are. And that's not going to be easy. And it's probably going to be things that are done behind the scenes, not in public. So the kicking out of diplomats, that's a public thing. But my guess is we can do more damage behind the scenes away from the television cameras. And it's going to take some creativity and it's going to take some guts. But we can't just, you know, we need Russia's cooperation to solve some of the big world problems we have. But that doesn't mean it should be carte blanche for them to run roughshod over our democracy and over the rule of law.
Well, so there has been some discussion about exactly how hard the United Kingdom, how hard Britain would be willing to clamp down, say, on all that Russian oligarch money flowing through London, for example.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's why I think the response is what it is, which has been to recall or to expel ambassadors and people suspected of being spies. I think had Britain tried to get a Europe all on board for a big new sanctions package, you know, that would have been a more difficult political thing to accomplish. So I think that's why we got what we got. But as I say, going forward, the issue will be, are we able to devise new tools to impose new costs?
Jim, we've got 30 seconds here, and it wouldn't be a geopolitical conversation with you without talking about North Korea. So North Korean leader Kim Jong-un might be visiting or has visited China? What do you make of that?
Yeah, Reuters and others are reporting that he got on a train and went to Beijing. If that is true, and maybe it was him, maybe it was other members of the family. Regardless, I take that as a good sign. It would be the first time he had ever traveled outside of a country since having taken power in North Korea. And it shows a seriousness about these upcoming meetings. And it means that maybe he would be willing to leave the country to have the summit, which would be important.
Jim Walsh, here now, security analyst. He's also with the Security Studies Program at MIT. Thank you.
Thank you.